Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe, and welcome to More Than Just a Mum.
My crew very quickly disappeared. I found it really hard to bond.
Don't go to the gym, just have a sleep.
This week on More Than Just a Mum, I am joined by Tennille Willing. Tell me a little bit about who you are. Where were you before becoming a mum? What makes you more than just a mum?
Well, I grew up in a small country town called Kennerfield in northern New South Wales. And like everyone, after we finish school, we move away. I eventually went to uni and studied nursing. And I worked as an oncology and palliative care nurse for several years before becoming a mum.
Wow. How old were you when you became a mum?
I was 27, I want to say.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, 27.
You and Mark decided it was time to start your family. It was obviously a conscious choice. You were trying?
Yeah, I would say like we weren't consciously trying, but we weren't doing anything to stop it. Put it that way. We I decided to go off the pill and we were like, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
And I fell pregnant a lot faster than I expected because I'd been on the pill for quite a while.
Yeah.
Everyone says it takes so long, but I fell pregnant really quickly and it was the smoothest, easiest pregnancy. I had no issues. So I just expected motherhood to be the same, as naive as we all are when we first have a baby.
Yeah.
But it wasn't to be.
It wasn't to be. Now, this is obviously sort of where this particular story of yours that we're telling kicks off. What happened?
Our son Mason, he's our firstborn. So he was born on his due date.
And wow, so you had the dream pregnancy even to he came on his due date. That is unheard of.
I remember going into labour. Well, I didn't know if it was labour, but I thought, oh, I think this must be it. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning and I thought, no, this is mind over matter. I cannot be going into labour now. Yeah. It's only because it's my due date. I'm sure it's nothing. And then I decided, I was like, oh, I'll time it. And figured it out eventually that, yes, it is in fact labour. And
Hold on. Let me get this straight. So you have had a dream pregnancy. You've gone into labour on his due date. And you didn't even know you were in labour.
Early in the morning, no. I thought, oh, it just felt like period pain. That was what I thought. Oh, it feels a bit like period pain. And then obviously it started to get more severe.
Right.
Because I'd had such an easy pregnancy, I thought, oh, I'd love to do the birth centre and have a water birth and be all nice and drug-free. Well, that didn't happen because when my waters broke, there was like meconium in your water, as they say.
Okay.
So I straight away was taken out of that birth centre. And ended up with an epidural and the worst. But
so what does that mean if it's in?
If the baby poos prior to being born, it puts the baby at a really high risk that they've aspirated and swallowed some fluid.
Okay.
And it often means that the baby's in stress. So they just had to closely monitor me through the labour that meant.
Yep.
As I said, I ended up having an epidural, which was a dream in the end. I remember saying to the doctor that did it, I remember saying, I could kiss you right now.
Why? Because you just got this amazing sense of relief?
Of relief, yes. I was like, oh, thank you. Why did I not do this earlier? So I wasn't someone that, yes, I would have loved to have had that natural birth, but I didn't have anything set in stone. I wasn't disappointed. But
I think that's the best way to be, though, isn't it? You sort of, you know, you can have an idea in your head of maybe sort of the dream, but I think at the end of the day, the goal is to get baby out safely. Yeah, and for mum to be safe too. Like, as whatever you have to do to get those two goals achieved, who the hell cares how you get there?
Exactly, and that's being a nurse as well. I think I was just, I trusted, trusted the system, and I trusted that I would do whatever they told me I needed to do.
Yeah,
he was born and he was small born. He was 2.83 kilos. So he was a small baby.
Yeah, for a full term, but that's little.
Yeah, and at the time, no one really, like everyone was like, oh, he's small, but nothing was really said about it. And I was a first-time mum.
Yeah.
And in the weeks following, that's when it started.
So the weeks following, that's when things started to not go as you thought they would? What happened?
Well, we left hospital and he was breastfeeding well from what I thought. I didn't have any pain, that kind of thing. Like breastfeeding was, at that point, I thought was easy.
Yeah.
I had the midwife come out regularly and check that he was gaining weight and he wasn't. And I think in the first week he gained, I can't remember how much it is supposed to be every week that they gain a certain amount, and he wasn't meeting any of those targets. Okay. And looking back, he was so skinny, but weeks went by, 3.5 weeks went by, and we were questioning it and we were wondering why he wasn't gaining weight. We had lactation consultants. We had.
So at this point, you were just thinking your supply.
Yeah. I was purely thinking my supply. I thought, what can I do? I was eating every booby bicky and baking.
All
and
the lactation brownies.
Everything. And nothing was working. And everyone that checked his latch thought, oh, it was okay. He did have a small tongue and lip tie. So we did have that cut. I think he was 8 days old when we had that sniff.
Yeah.
And at that point, I thought that was the most traumatic thing that could ever happen to my baby. Well, I was wrong.
Little but did you know what was coming, yeah.
Yeah, and he seemed to then relatch fine, and no one was concerned with his latch. And I was supplementing with, I was topping up with formula. I was line feeding, and then I was pumping. It was just like a round-the-clock job. And I look back and I think, why did I put myself through that? Like, why didn't I just switch straight to formula for my own mental health,
I
really?
I ask myself the same thing, but I think it's almost something within us as mums, isn't it? Especially if, you know, because Kennedy was sick when she was born, so I felt like I had to. And then if Mason wasn't gaining weight, you're probably putting that extra pressure on yourself knowing how good breast milk is. And
That's the thing. No one else put that pressure on me. It was me putting that pressure on me. Like, it was, So it went on. Yeah, for 4 weeks to the day it was when we got the phone call to say that his test result had come back. And I just remember the night before I actually was in the shower, and I was standing in the shower and I thought, oh, well, I remember the midwife saying to me when they did the heel prick, you won't hear anything from this. It's only if you have these very rare genetic conditions that you will hear back from this. And I remember standing in the shower thinking, oh, well, I didn't hear back from the heel prick. That's one thing we can tick off.
So is that, and, I mean, does every baby get that? Because, I don't even remember.
Yeah, in Australia, we're really lucky that it's something that all babies get when they're born in the first few days. And, just a little heel prick, and it tests for all the rare genetic
disorders. Okay. So, I suppose, just like you said, I suppose you probably actually only thought of it maybe because you had the medical training behind you, but for I suppose a lot of new mums in that moment, we wouldn't have even remembered that it had happened.
Yes, and I remember a nurse I worked with, and she had a little boy who was born with PKU, which is another rare genetic thing that I don't know a lot about. And I remember her saying it was picked up by the heel prick. So I was a little bit like aware that, oh yeah, like I remember she had the baby. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we were thinking like, oh, is it an intolerance to lactose? Is it something that we were thinking intolerance, and we were thinking, okay, what do I need to start to cut out of my diet that could possibly help Mason, or what could we do? All of this feeding, everything wasn't working. Like, we knew something wasn't right, and we had no family history of what was to come. It was just a massive shock when we got the phone call. It happened at, I think it was 2:30 on a Friday afternoon, and thankfully Mark was at home.
Yeah.
He was out in our garage, and I remember I was sitting on the lounge. I remember every word of this phone call.
Tell me, what did they say?
It was a registrar from our local hospital, and she said, hi, I'm just calling to let you know that your baby's heel prick test result has come back, and it's shown that he has cystic fibrosis. And I remember just being speechless, really. And she went on to say, do you know what cystic fibrosis is? And I said, yes, I do, because I had actually done a prac as a nurse in a CF respiratory ward in the Prince Charles Hospital. So I was aware of what CF was. And she kind of just kept talking, and I just said, excuse me, can you please stop? I said, are you telling me that our son definitely has cystic fibrosis? And she said, there's a very high likelihood. And she says, do you have anyone with you? Are you at home by yourself? And I was like, you could have asked me that question.
I was going to say, God, don't you think that should have been asked beforehand?
I said, oh, I'm home with my husband. And at this point, I was walking out to the garage, and I just opened the door, and I must have had this look of horror on my face. And she said, do you want to tell him or do you want me to tell him? And I just passed the phone over to Mark and obviously fell in a heap. And I don't remember a whole lot of what happened after that.
What were you feeling when she said those words, like cystic fibrosis? Oh, what?
At the time, I think I just went into
shock,
nurse mode. Yeah, okay. Shock and nurse mode. And that's, I thought, weird. How do we fix this? Like, what can I do? Like, how can I make my baby better? Like, how did this happen? How did he have CF? Like, we're healthy. Mark and I are both healthy. How has our baby, who is seemingly healthy, how did this happen, really? Like, that's what was going through my head.
Does it happen? Excuse my ignorance, but...
No. Well, that's the thing. Most people are blissfully unaware. It is a genetic disease. Both parents have to be a carrier of cystic fibrosis to pass it on to their child. And
so if one of you were a carrier and the other wasn't?
We would not pass it on. We could pass on a carrier. So like Mason could be an unknown carrier, which is what we are, because carriers are unaffected by CF. Wow. So surprisingly, people always say, oh, it's so rare though, isn't it? And it is, but 1 in 25 people in Australia are carriers of cystic fibrosis. So when you think a class of kids, essentially 1 in every class is a carrier of CF.
And all they need to do is fall in love with the kid from the next class.
So it's not that rare. It's not, no. And we obviously had no family history. It was just a massive, massive shock.
So you're on the ground, just a mess, I can only imagine. What did Mark say? He's then on the phone getting the same news you've just had.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't actually remember what he said or anything. But, yeah, it is a little bit of a blur. But he's definitely more of an emotional person than I am, really, I think. And I just remember saying, we need to call Queensland Children's Hospital. At that time, it was called Lady Salento. We just went into, okay, how do we start to help him? Like, what can we do?
Yeah.
And
so do you think you were doing that to avoid the emotional response? Was this sort of maybe like a protective?
Yes, 100%, 100%. I don't think I could have dealt any other way, to be honest. I think it was just, we need to get this done and we need to push on and do this.
You went into protective mama mode.
Yeah, for Mason. And I think that's how it was, really, to be honest, the first couple of years.
In the early days, so obviously there was the high chance of it. What followed?
As soon as the registrar got off the phone, we then got a phone call from Lady Salento at the time, and it was one of the CF nurses. And she said, Tennille, I'm not sure what the doctor has told you, but Mason definitely has cystic fibrosis. He has the most common gene, which we found out later. He has the most common gene, which is from Mark's side, and he has one other gene, which is from your side. He will eventually have to have a sweat test, which is a definitive diagnosis, basically, for CF. Mm-hmm. But we need you to come down. It was Friday afternoon, which made it so much harder, because we then had the weekend and we had to go down on Monday morning.
You probably just wanted to get in the car then and there.
Yes. I was like, what can we do? But there was nothing we could do. And they said, he's okay. Like, he's going to be okay over the weekend. Just come down early Monday morning and we will go through everything. And of course, they say before they get off the phone, and please, Neil, do not Google cystic fibrosis. So what's the first thing that every parent does as soon as they get off the phone?
I remember them saying the same thing to me about Kennedy. And you know, don't Google the worst, don't Google CMV. Don't look at it.
Yeah.
And obviously that's literally the first thing that I did.
Yes, of course. And then you go on Instagram and Facebook and try and find every person that has cystic fibrosis in the world.
And you just, and it makes it even worse because you're looking at these worst case scenarios. And
yeah, it has such a bad reputation, cystic fibrosis, because 20 years ago, kids didn't live that long. And when we went down on the Monday morning, they told us everything about cystic fibrosis. And they told us that his life expectancy is a lot shorter than another child his age. And at that time, I think the life expectancy was 36, is what they said.
Oh, my God.
And to be told that your four-week-old baby has basically an expiry date, like that's how we saw it at that time, was terrifying.
How do you even take that information in?
I don't really know. We had no choice. Like, you don't have a choice when you've got this little tiny baby who is completely helpless. And at that point, he was what they called failure to thrive. He had gained, I think it may have been about 300 grams in 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So he was tiny. And we just wanted to help him. We were just, how do we help him? How do we?
So you didn't even get to that place of thinking through of a potential life expectancy. You were more concerned about him in the moment at this current point.
Yeah, we thought, well, we need to get him through this moment to get him to that point. And that's his doctor, who is the most amazing person that I've ever met. She said the life expectancy, even in the last 4 years, and the amount of new drugs that are available just in that time is huge. And she said, I can't even imagine where CF will be in another 10 years. She said, so please don't see this as
a definite.
Like such a, she said, everything is changing. And you know what? In Mason's five, nearly 6 years, so much has changed in that time. And so we pretty much just have to live in hope that things keep changing as he grows.
This
basically
is a really tough question to ask, but in that 5 to 6, nearly 6 years that he's been alive, with things changing, have you been given a different life expectancy for him, or is it still?
The life expectancy for CF now, I have a feeling it might be close to 50 now. There's people that are living 20 years longer than what they're expected, or they'll be on the list for a lung transplant and now they're off the list and they're not having oxygen and they're living a full life and they're back at work. So there's amazing stories out there. There's still devastating stories, but there are a lot of positives out there that we just hold on to.
The idea that you might have to outlive your baby is just not a natural thought, is it?
No, and that's the thing. Like, I always remember when I was young and like a child that I knew that had passed away, and I remember everyone says, no parent wants to outlive their children.
No.
Like, that should not happen. And I just remember that going through my head. And to be honest, that thought still goes through our head. Like, and I hoped, God, that never happened.
My experience with Kennedy is just nothing compared to you and other mums out there that have a child with a lifelong disease that they have to live with. But anytime she gets sick, the panic in me just going back to that time and being terrified for her. I can't even imagine how you know, your little man gets sick and it could be life-threatening.
To be honest, that's the hardest thing, is cystic fibrosis is invisible, essentially. So even though it affects him so much internally, externally, he looks like such a healthy little boy.
He does. He looks so happy and just like every other five, nearly six-year-old.
Yeah. Yes, he's a happy, healthy, he does soccer and he swims and he plays and there is nothing that he cannot do that other kids can. He just has a lot more going on inside, and that's one of the hardest things, is people don't understand how serious it is, because it is an invisible illness, and trying to get them to understand, please don't bring your sick child to our house, or please let us know if we're going somewhere and you've got a sick child or you're sick.
Yeah.
We would prefer to postpone rather than get sick, because a cold to you might be 2 weeks for us in hospital.
Or worse.
Yes, or worse, exactly. It is a very lonely and isolating disease, CF, and I feel so selfish saying that, because it's lonely and isolating for me as a mum, but more for people with CF, because they can't actually mingle. So Mason knows other little boys that have CF and other little girls, but he just has a little friend here, for instance, where we live, who has CF, but they can never play. They can never be friends.
Children or people with CF can't interact. Why?
Because they can carry a bacteria in their lungs that doesn't affect you and I, but to them it can cause permanent scarring of their lungs and obviously lessen their lung function and, ultimately end very badly. But 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they used to actually do CF camps, and everyone would go to the CF camp and the kids from CF would all be in one room in hospital. And now it's the total opposite.
Wow.
You're not allowed to him. It's completely done a flip when they've realised about this cross infection. So it's a very isolating thing to have, unfortunately.
And I mean, obviously, you know, you said that you feel so selfish saying that, but I really do want to focus on you as a mum. And I know that it's such within us as mothers to want to talk about our babies and how, you know, how it's affected them. And it's not natural for us to sit back and actually look at how it's impacted us. But, you know, there's so many mums that go through their children being sick. And I feel like we don't actually get a moment as a mum to really feel it ourselves. We're always thinking about everyone else.
100%. And to be honest, I still don't think I fully just sit in those feelings sometimes. Like it's hard because CF is very relentless.
Yeah.
So you have to move on. You don't have a choice. You don't have a choice to sit and
How many times do you reckon you've been to hospital with Mason?
At least 7 to 8 months of his life in 2 week stints. So we do 2 week stints if he needs antibiotics, and he has done a couple of 3 week stints. So they're long and they're isolating. You are in your own room. You're not allowed to mingle. You need to go straight up to the gym if you go to the gym for physio and straight back down. You can't mingle with other people in the ward at all. I'm better now, the older he's getting, at taking a break. I just will say, mate, you need to sit on the bed, mate, or I'll ask a nurse if they can just watch him and just take a breath, even if it's just sit outside the room or go and sit in the parent lounge.
Yeah.
You need a break. It's very, very relentless.
I so resonate with that. Totally different experience. But obviously I had to lock myself up for about 6 months to try and protect Kennedy while she was on medication. But after that, it created such an anxiety in me where my house was the only safe place in the world. Did you feel that?
Exactly the same feelings as what you just said. We really struggled. We struggled with letting visitors come into our house.
Yeah.
And every time someone would sniffle or every time someone would clear their throat, they'd leave and I'd say to Mark, oh my God, they were sick. They shouldn't have come here. And it just, we did really isolate ourselves.
Everyone becomes an enemy in a really weird way, don't they? Like it's
that, yeah, not that
100%. You, not in a way that you don't like them, but everyone is a threat.
I really struggled to ask for help because I thought no one can look after Mason.
Yep.
Like we can. No one knows
what to Mason look for.
So, yeah, no one knows how to give him. He requires medication prior to every feed.
Yeah.
So prior to everything he eats, he requires medication.
Wow.
So I thought, I can't leave him with anyone. In that time, I thought, we are never going to have a life. We can't leave him with other people because what if something happens and what are they going to do? And obviously you think of all the worst things that could possibly go wrong.
Always.
And thankfully I have a very close family and we are very lucky that we have a really good support system. But even some of our close friends and family did start to drift away because we know that it affected them when we'd say, are you sick? Have you been sick? Can you please stay away if you've been sick? And some people, as much as I don't think it's their choice, some people do get a little bit cross, I think, and they do get a little bit standoffish. In the end, it's just your group quickly diminishes to a very small amount of people that are willing to be there, really.
I remember I started to feel forgotten. It wasn't even that I felt people were getting annoyed. I mean, some people definitely got annoyed, but I also started to feel like life was continuing on without me in all of their lives and I couldn't be a part of it. And I started to feel like I was just being forgotten. Did you get that?
Yeah, definitely. And we were relatively new to Toowoomba where we lived, and I knew a few people from work, but it wasn't as though we grew up here and we had a close-knit group of friends. So in my head, I was like, oh, I can't wait to have a baby and go to the playgroups and meet friends. And none of that could happen.
Yeah.
So other than our family, I really didn't have a lot of support, which was no one else's problem but my own.
Yeah.
And it was no one else's fault but my own. But I just, at the time, I couldn't. And we still don't have a lot of close friends around from Mason's age. Like it wasn't as though I met them at playgroup or I met them at mother's group or anything, because I couldn't do that. He's now at school this year in prep, which is another anxiety-filling event in itself.
Oh my gosh, I could only imagine. You know, again, he's back around all these kids that are sick all the time. And then there's a school that's got to be involved with medication. Like, it's just never ending, is it?
It is never ending. And that's the hardest thing is CF being invisible. It is so hard for people to understand. And we have struggled over the years with schools and care providers realizing how serious it can be for him. And school has been no different. There's definitely been teething issues, and there's definitely been times that I just want to scream and say, it's not that hard, please just care about my child. But people are selfish. As much as we say we care about others, people need to go to work. So people will send their kid with a snotty nose, and people will send their kid with a cough. And it's very hard to accept. And as you said earlier, it's hard not to hate on everyone as much as you don't want to, but it is hard not to see everyone 100%. As
a threat,
an enemy.
Now, just to veer off for a second here, because you guys, was it last year, had your second little love?
Yes, now have another little girl, Ava, who was born in December of 2021. So obviously there's a 5-year age gap between Mason and Ava, and that was another very big journey to get from Mason to Ava. So she's our little miracle girl for sure.
How did you make that decision? Obviously, you know, as you said, it's genetic. There's nothing you can do to stop that. Was there a chance that Ava could have had CF too, or how did that work?
So with cystic fibrosis, there's actually a 1 in 4 chance every pregnancy of a child having CF. Through IVF and genetic testing, you can eliminate that risk of more children having genetic disorders.
Is that the
disorders.
Path you went down, or did you go natural?
It is the path that we went down. It was a very hard decision as to whether we would have another child. We were happy with Mason. Mm-hmm. We always wanted 2 kids, but with everything with Mace, you want to give him the fullest life and you want him to have everything. And I always said, I'm happy for him to be spoiled. I just don't want him to be a brat. And I remember talking to so many people about having just one child, and I was happy. We were both happy to have one child, but Mason got to the age, I think when he was about 2, is when we were like, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to have another one or leave it? And we thought, do we discuss this in a year's time? Mm-hmm. And we decided, you know what, let's do it. That's what we originally wanted. Let's have a go at IVF and let's try and see. I just remember I had no idea of the toll it would take on my body or my mental health. Everything's so clinical and everything is so down to the day of what you need to do.
Takes
when
the
you
romance
need to do it.
Out.
Yes, 100%. It was non-existent. So we did one cycle, and after the egg collection, I remember waking up and I think it's just so emotional. And I just remember them saying they collected 3 eggs, which is very low.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh.
What's an average amount to collect?
They said an ideal amount would be 12 to 15 would be amazing.
And you got 3.
And I got 3 and I thought, oh.
Oh, great. You must have felt gutted.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, it wasn't just, we didn't just have the egg collection. We then sent away for the genetic testing. Mm-hmm. In the freezing process, only 1 survived and it was sent for testing and it had CF.
Oh,
so that was devastating. And we thought, we only said it was only going to do 1 cycle. And I think that's what every couple goes into IVF thinking. Yeah. We're just doing 1 cycle. And then we end up having another cycle and then another cycle and none of them worked. And then I actually got 4 embryos sent for testing on the 3rd time and sent them away. And it was like the perfect genetic. 1 had CF, 1 embryo had CF, 2 were carriers, and 1 was clear of CF. And I thought, this is it. We have 3, because a carrier is essentially healthy.
Yeah.
So
I mean, then,
we thought, okay, we have 3 chances of a baby here.
Yeah.
This has to work. There's no other reason that it won't. And, of course, the first 2 failed, and the last 1 worked, and we were like, amazing. I thought, this is perfect. This is our dream come true. And we decided before that no matter what, that was it. We were not doing it again. And then at about 7 to 8 weeks, I had a little bit of nausea, but that just went. And I thought, oh, okay.
So you were pregnant. This worked and you were pregnant.
yeah, I was pregnant and I was like, hallelujah, it worked. And we've got this healthy baby and it's going to be amazing. And I went for the first scan at 8 weeks and he said, oh, it looks like you might be about 6 weeks, 5 to 6 weeks. And I said, no, I'm definitely, I knew exactly the date. Obviously, well, IVF.
I was going to say, it's not like there's any guesswork when you've gone through IVF. So
no. And he said, oh, I'll just go and get another sonographer. And she came in and she said, how far along should you be? And I told her and she said, the heart rate isn't where it should be. And she said, it's very slow. It is definitely there, but it's very slow. She goes, I'm not saying that you have had a miscarriage, but it is likely that it will happen in the next couple of days. And I was holding on to this little tiny bit of hope that, come on, this baby has, like, maybe it's just implanted late and yeah, maybe that's why it's a bit slower. Or, and obviously contacted our fertility clinic and had told them, and we went down and they did the scan, and yeah, it was picked up that there was no heartbeat at that point. I just felt like my body was failing. Our little boy has fear, and then now we've tried so hard to have this baby and my body is failing again. Like, I just, it was just like a constant, I just wish it could just do its job and just
do what it's meant to do.
Yeah, just yeah, the whole natural pregnancy thing just had gone out the window. And I think it was like 4 or 5 weeks later, I was still bleeding. And so I actually had to go back in and have a second DNC, which again, I had to go through it all again.
Oh my gosh.
And after that, it was just, we are done. We are so done. We are so lucky to have. Yeah.
You must have felt like at that moment, this is just the universe saying, guys, call it quits.
Yeah.
This has been one hell of a ride.
And we said that. We said that to each other. We said, this is the universe's way of saying, just be done. You are done. And genetic testing and IVF is something that comes with a lot of opinions. And fair enough, a lot of people say you're basically choosing your child's destiny and things like that. But I think until you're in a position where your child has a genetic disease, you cannot make an opinion about it.
Oh.
Because I wasn't doing it because I wanted the perfect child. I wasn't doing it for that. I was doing it because you would never, ever want a child to go through what
Mason goes through.
And yeah, I just remember thinking, I never, ever want another child to go through that. I hadn't gone back on the pill after doing IVF, but I thought, well, it was so hard to fall pregnant on IVF and my egg count so low, there's really no chance that I'm going to fall pregnant naturally.
No.
And I did.
No way.
Yes. So after all of that and deciding that, no, we are done, lovely trip away to Yamba with Mason in tow, obviously. And yeah.
Well, that's what they say, isn't it? It's, you've taken all the stress out, you're relaxed, you're not thinking about it, you're in the moment again.
Yes, 100%.
Oh my
God. I fell pregnant, and to be honest, the first thought that went through our head was, oh my God, what are we going to do if this child has CF as well?
Well, that's it. You have no way of avoiding that.
And I was aware of other families that had two or more children with CF, and I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, it's okay, I can do this. And I knew that I was pregnant, and there was no way that I would have never, just personally, I would have never been able to do anything. I wouldn't have changed anything.
You were having that baby no matter what.
I was having this baby.
Yeah.
Yes, and I thought, we can deal with it. We have dealt with what's going on with Mason. We can definitely deal with this.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He's a normal little boy and he lives life the same as everyone else.
Yeah.
And there is no way I would have changed that now
for
that
the world.
I was pregnant.
Yeah.
I thought, everyone is going to judge us. People are going to think, why would they do that to their child? Why would they have two kids with CF? And that's all that went through my head was, what are other people going to think? And Mark said to me, oh, it's our life and it's our child. Who cares what other people think? We will make this work and this child will be just as loved as any other child. So why does it matter what other people think? So
isn't that so sad? Like, here I am thinking, you must have just been elated, you know, other than obviously being really worried at the same time, but just so thrilled that this had happened. But you weren't for a bit.
It was terrifying. And I actually remember saying, the CF nurses, no one else really understands unlike them. And enough, obviously other parents of kids with CF. And I actually told one of the CF nurses while we were in hospital, I said, I'm pregnant and I am so scared. And she was like, Tennille, do not worry. Like, you can do it. She was just so excited for us. And it just kind of gave me that relief of, oh, like, we can do it. And she was just so positive. And she was like, you will be fine. If your child has CF, you will be fine. At that point, I said to Mark, I need to know if this baby has CF.
Well, yeah, and you need to mentally prepare one way or the other, don't you?
Yeah. And that was it. I was like, I need to prepare for this and I need to be prepared. And that was at a CVS test, which you can do at 13 weeks. When they finally called and said, your baby is just a carrier. So Ava is a carrier of CF, and she is the same as Mark and I, but she doesn't have CF. So it was...
Oh, my God. How did you feel in that moment?
Oh, I think I was home alone, and I just burst into tears. And Mason was here with me as well, and I just remember grabbing him and crying, and he had no idea what I was crying for. But I just remember... Yeah, crying, calling Mark and saying, oh, my God, it's only a carrier. Like, this baby's only a carrier. She's fine. Oh. So, thankfully, that was a huge. And, yeah, she has pretty much since that day just been our little miracle baby to all of us. She's so loved and she's a dream come true to Mason. He's the best big brother.
What a ride you've been on.
It's definitely been wild and... It is very different to what we had planned, but we would not change Mason at all.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be him without what he goes through.
Yeah.
And it definitely makes us take every day as it comes. We try really hard not to sweat the small stuff and like really appreciate our time that we have with him and with Ava, because you just never ever know when things could change.
Do you go back there every time he gets sick? Do you go back into that moment and go, oh my God? Or do you get to a point where you go, it's okay, we've been through this, it's going to be
all right? I would love to say that I just think, oh, we'll get through this, it'll be fine. But Mason is actually currently unwell with RSV, rhinovirus, and he's now tested positive for COVID. So it has definitely been a very interesting couple of weeks.
Does your mind still, and like, I know it's probably really hard to ask at the moment because he is so unwell, but does your mind go to the worst even now?
Yes, every time. Every time we hear him cough, Mark and I look at each other and your heart sinks. And every time you hear him cough in the middle of the night, your heart just sinks thinking, oh my God, I hope this doesn't. Because essentially with cystic fibrosis is their lungs fill with so much mucus, whereas our lungs just easily cough out infections and we just naturally get over them. If they find it so hard because they can't cough that mucus out, it's so thick and sticky essentially. Yeah. So it's just a breeding ground for infection. And every infection increases the risk of scarring and permanent lung damage. He actually has to go back in for a 2-week admission coming up. I got the phone call on Friday to tell us that he would be going back in. He was actually here and he said, what's happening, Mum? And I said, mate, we have to go back to hospital. We have to get rid of this bug that's in your lungs. Mm. And he was devastated. And it's the first time really that I think he's really fully understood that he's going for 2 weeks and that means he's missing school.
He's missing his friends.
Yeah, and he was devastated. And it's the time come that we had been waiting for. And he said, that's so unfair. Ava doesn't have to do anything and I have to go to hospital. And Mark and I just both were obviously devastated for him. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, we can't ever take that away. We just have to be there for him and we have to just make the best of it. There's no point moping around and there's no point being devastated about it and saying, oh, we hate hospital and we actually try really hard to make it as
a
fun
positive
as
experience. Possible. Well, it's going to be unfortunately such a huge part of his life, isn't it?
And that's the thing, it is.
What advice do you have to mums that maybe know that they're pregnant with a child that might have some sort of illness or going down that path or have just had a child with illness or have one, whatever it is, what advice do you have for those mums?
The best advice that you can give anyone is just give yourself time and it's okay to think, why me and why is this happening to us? But just know that you can do it. I feel like because I'm still in this, it is hard to give advice on what you should do and how you should feel, but just sit in those feelings and seek support. You need support. So don't isolate yourself, because that is the hardest thing that you can do for yourself and for your baby. And don't be afraid to ask for help.
You've had a huge, huge roller coaster in the last few years into motherhood, and you have still been able to sit here tonight and tell it start to finish so well. You know, you are out there, like you said, you wanted to come on here when I asked so that you could spread that message, and you're so strong. And I just think to have gotten through what you've gotten through is nothing short of inspiring. So you should be so proud of yourself.
Thank you, Courtney. Honestly, that makes me feel quite emotional. But thank you so much for having me on and just letting me share, because so few people know about cystic fibrosis, and it's so nice to be able to spread a little bit of awareness, hopefully. And hopefully everyone that does listen, even if a few of you just go out and have a look on the CF Australia website, or just learn a little bit more about cystic fibrosis and invisible illnesses, and don't judge a book by its cover, because you never, ever know what is going on underneath the exterior of someone.
That is so true, and such great advice as well. And I know I'll definitely be going, and I mean, I did after I met you, but especially after tonight, I'm really intrigued to learn a bit more about it, just to be more aware of that, and that it's so important to actually think about your health, especially in the world that we live in now, not just for yourself, but for people like Mason.
Yeah, and I just wish more people would think about other people out there, not just themselves and their own life. Just because we're healthy and well, we still need to care about those that live with illnesses that we might not be aware of.